outline your priorities for your tenure as OFPP administrator, please, Joe.
Sure, and thanks for having me on here, Francis. I think that there are three main areas that I'd like to focus on as I join the Office of Federal Procurement Policy. The first is helping agencies buy smarter and buy less. So these are things like strategic sourcing or using increased data analysis in their purchasing process and all of those sorts of things. Secondly, we want to make sure that they're doing business with responsible parties. So this is where it has a very positive connotation around improving our small business utilization, and also an oversight component where we've got a lot of responsibilities to protect the taxpayer dollar and prevent fraud, waste, and abuse. Lastly, but very importantly, we need to focus on continuing the development of our acquisition workforce. And this is not just the 1102s, the contracting officers, but also the project managers and the contracting officers' representatives as well, because we need to strengthen the accountability for all of the tax dollars that we spend, and we really need to maximize the value for the American people.
Let's talk about the acquisition workforce piece. When you look at the landscape of the workforce, and I know it varies agency to agency, but overall, what do you see? Do you see potential being maximized, or are there still areas where agencies can grow with the resources that they have without coming to you or coming to OMB and saying, we need a little bit more help?
Well, there's no doubt that agencies have done a tremendous job over the last few years in training their folks, in increasing the attention that they place on acquisition and the development of acquisition professionals. But I do think there's more we can do, and there's more that we will do. Some examples of that are our great strides in partnering with the Federal Acquisition Institute on the civilian contracting officer side, making sure that both the content and the frequency of the training is at the right level, so we can be both efficient and effective in delivering the right learnings, the right new information, cutting-edge policy skills and tools to the civilian acquisition workforce. We're doing the same thing with more of a focus in on defense with the Defense Acquisition University, and they've really pushed the envelope on some of the types of training that they're giving, so that whether you're buying commodities or major weapon systems, you've got the right folks trained on the right things. We've also done a lot of one-off letters and memos and conversations to bridge the awareness gap and make folks fully understanding of all the tools that are at their disposal. Examples of this are the Mythbusters campaign, or when OFPP convenes the acquisition folks who are out there on the front lines via our frontline forum. Get from them what are some of the challenges they're facing and give to them tools and solutions that they can use to overcome those challenges. And when I talk about the acquisition workforce, again, I'm not just talking about the contracting officers, those 36,000 dedicated 1102 series folks who are issuing the contracts each day. I'm also talking about the program managers who are thinking up what their needs are, what are the goods and services and the specs that they need to fulfill their agency mission, and the contracting officers' representatives, these used to be called the COTARs, that are responsible for managing the contracts day in and day out. You know, agencies have made some great progress in viewing the acquisition workforce through this big tent mentality and making sure everyone understands they have a role to play. And I really look forward to continuing the administration's progress in this area.
One of the things that I've seen since I've been following this stuff, Joe, is a progression of professionalism in the acquisition workforce, where agencies are trying to make it an appealing career track to bring somebody in, but most importantly, to keep the talented people that you already have. Is that something you anticipate trying to develop, not that the strategy that exists now isn't coherent, but to really refine and hone and perfect a retention strategy for the people that you already have?
Absolutely. You hit the nail right in the head. I mean, it's important that we recruit the right folks, that we're clearly communicating what an important role acquisition professionals play in the government, what an exciting job it can be. I mean, there's over $500 billion that go out through federal contracts every year. One out of every $6 the government spends goes out through a government contract. So this is an exciting place. If you're someone who's interested in government service, who really wants to step in and play a role where you can improve government, improve value for the taxpayers, why wouldn't you want to be an acquisition professional? I mean, this is where the money is, and if you can do it just a little bit better on a percent basis, you're going to have a tremendous impact on the overall government and on the overall acquisition system. So you're right in the fact that we need to, you know, the message is there. The facts are clear, but we need to get that message out to the next generation of procurement leaders, to the next generation of contracting officers in the recruitment front. And then we've got to focus on retaining the great high-quality folks we've already had. And you said you've seen a progression in, you know, positive way in this area, and I totally agree with you. But I do think that we're going to do some more there. We're going to make sure that the folks who are here know that they're valued. I mean, this is not the easiest time to be a federal employee, and I'm going to go around and talk to them, you know, at every level and let them know how important their role is to the success of the government, how important their role is to any mission success at their agency, and how much they are valued. And, again, get from them what are some of the challenges they're facing. What are some of the pain points they're feeling so that hopefully I can use my role and our team here to help them solve those things? You know, one of the things, for instance, is all too frequently when I hear what some of the major challenges are from our great acquisition professionals, there's someone somewhere else who's already solved that problem, who's already cracked the code on how to figure that out. The problem is getting that answer, getting that solution syndicated throughout the whole government, throughout the whole acquisition workforce. And that's where I see OFPP, given my bully pulpit, given our ability to communicate with all of the agencies and all of the stakeholders, to really make a difference in a positive way.
I spoke to two of your predecessors on the program yesterday, Al Berman and Steve Kelman, former administrators at OFPP, and we talked about that very issue. One of the challenges that they're seeing from the outside looking in is the cadre of skilled acquisition professionals is still small enough that it is enticing for one agency to try to poach from another, and it's enticing for the contracting community to try to poach from government. Do you see any potential steps that you can take to prevent that beyond what you're talking about, trying to mitigate pain points and try to make the situations in which these professionals are in as attractive as possible for them to stick around?
Well, first of all, you mentioned some of my predecessors. As I take this role and enter as the administrator, I could not be more humbled. I'm so honored that the president asked me to do this, and I'm so appreciative of, you know, the great folks who have come before me in the administrator's office. So, you know, it's great to hear that you're talking to some of those great people. In terms of your point about talent moving around and be pushed, you know, I want to be clear, that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, I want acquisition professionals to feel like, hey, when I enter this job, whatever the next one I'm doing is, if I do a great job, if I deliver great value for my agency, for the taxpayer, there's a tremendous outcome, be it, you know, I might jump to a higher position within my agency, I might jump to a higher position in another agency, you know, I may go to the private sector, what have you. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think that what we want to do is make the value proposition, and this isn't just a monetary value proposition, this is a mission-based, you know, a service-based value proposition, so great that folks are clamoring to get into the government, to get into this acquisition professional cadre, and not just jumping out. So, you know, in managing, whether I was in the private sector in my past experience or at SBA immediately before this, I saw great examples where, you know, I lost some of my best people. Now, I also went around trying to get some of other people's best people, and I think that's healthy. And I think if we can create that kind of clear upward mobility throughout the acquisition workforce, you're going to see it attract more and more talent, and I think that's a great thing.
You mentioned the work and life experience that you bring to this job, Joe. How does that experience at SBA and in the private sector inform the way that you look at regulatory issues, which is something I've heard a lot about from industry, and disciplinary matters like suspension and debarment? You've been on both sides of that now, private sector and government.
I have. And you know, for instance, I think that both my private sector experience and my time at SBA are hugely helpful when it comes to how I approach and think about those regulatory issues or disciplinary matters. You know, both of those situations made me acutely aware of the need for fair and effective rules of the road. And that's all regulations are when we're talking about procurement regs or the FAR, the Federal Acquisition Regulations. We're talking about the rules that govern this process. And everybody would agree that we want them to be fair and we want them to work. Now, we also need to minimize the burdens on stakeholders. And whether it was while I was in the private sector or certainly working day in and day out with small businesses, those experiences really drove home the importance of having those fair and effective rules but minimizing the burdens, making sure that we're very thoughtful every time we make a change to the regs, being very thoughtful about any potential unintended consequences. And that doesn't mean me sitting in a chair in Washington and coming up with those answers. It means work in a collaborative way with all of the various stakeholders. You know, when we changed some of the regs in one of the programs I worked on at SBA, it was the first time in more than a decade that we'd revised the regulations for the 8A program. My team and I went around the country, did a 12-city listening tour to make sure that folks didn't have to come inside the Washington, D.C. Beltway to get heard. We wanted to get out to them. And then we had a robust public comment period. We got more than 2,500 public comments, and we read every one. And we took all of that input and said, hey, you know what? In this one area, everybody thinks, you know, given the choices of how we could have done it, we did it well. In this other area, they've brought up some really good points. They've raised some things that maybe we hadn't thought of, and we need to adjust accordingly. And that's great. That's how you come out with good regulations that do what you're trying to do and set good enforceable rules, but you know, make sure you're being thoughtful on the other end. And the thing is, when people break those rules, the government's got to protect the taxpayer dollars. And when that happens, when folks break the rules and the government takes strong action to protect those dollars, it does have a signaling effect. It sends throughout the entire system. You know, it says to folks, these actions are not going to be tolerated. The ultimate goal is not to punish the bad actors. That's just an intermediate step. The ultimate goal is to prevent folks from even trying the fraud, waste, you know, abusive practices. And that's where, you know, working with the community, we can get to the right answers here.
I guess the fear that I hear the most from people in industry is that some of the provisions, and to be fair, some of this stuff is coming out of Congress. This pressure is not coming from the administration. But the fear is that there are some due process issues where vendors are afraid that they're going to be suspended, potentially debarred without even an opportunity to demonstrate that they were or weren't guilty of whatever it is they're accused of.
Sure, and I definitely do not want that to happen. I've talked in the past at SBA when I both oversaw policy but also specific programs about the importance to simultaneously protect the taxpayer dollar, make sure only eligible businesses are receiving these contracts, but also making sure everyone gets due process. And whether that's in terms of upfront certification for certain programs, the way we do ongoing surveillance and monitoring to, you know, make sure folks are who they say they are and are still eligible, or on the back end, the enforcement pieces, you know, the punishing of the bad actors, that we're being thoughtful throughout the process and that we're giving everyone due process and due consideration. Now, you know, that's one of the things I do want to make a distinction between suspension and debarment is, you know, those are very important tools, but they're tools to protect the taxpayer dollar, to take immediate action, to make sure no taxpayer dollars are put at risk. But there are a whole set of other enforcement tools that we then engage in. Agencies work, you know, hand in hand with their inspectors general, with the Department of Justice, to make sure that if there is, you know, retributive action needed to be taken, that it's through those legal channels. And that suspension and debarment, while a very important tool, gets used for its intended purpose.
I want to go back to something that you mentioned in your priorities at the beginning that I thought was interesting, Joe. The first one that you listed was buying smarter, buying less. Do you mean less stuff, or do you mean fewer transactions, or both?
You know, in some cases, it's both. I think that the, you know, for far too long, there was an unsustainable growth in contract spending. You know, you look at the, you know, 8 years starting in 2000 and you go from around $230 billion to pushing $500 billion. That's not a sustainable path. I'm a metrics guy. I'm a data guy. I can draw a graph. And if you extended that line out another 8 years, we were in a really bad place. So for the first few years of the administration, of this administration, they worked really hard to bend the cost curve. And we saw that. The first decrease in, you know, years and years, the first flattening over 2 years in almost two decades. You know, good things like that. We've got to make sure that we're being very thoughtful about what we buy, how we buy it, and that every dollar people understand, that's a taxpayer dollar that we're putting to work. It better be to procure something that we need for our mission. Now, there's also a buying smarter component in terms of how do we acquire the goods that we've made the determination we absolutely need. And that's where, when I talked about, you know, one example, strategic sourcing. This does not mean bundling. This does not mean thoughtless bulk purchasing. This means just what it says, being strategic, being incredibly thoughtful, data-driven, and fact-based in the way that you source, that you acquire the goods and services that your agency needs. So it means using the full buying power of the United States government for what it is. You know, we need to leverage our spend base. We're the largest procurer of goods and services in the world, yet for far too long, the government purchased as if it were 130 mid-sized businesses. That's not smart. That's not delivering the best value to the taxpayer. And this doesn't mean that driving down prices is the only goal. It means that we're being thoughtful, that we're being strategic, that we can still, you know, have great small business utilization, that we can still build a great supply chain for the government and all of these other things that we want to do while also leveraging our full spend base. You know, a quick example there is the office supplies contract. You know, GSA and OFPP worked together to come up with an office supply federal strategic sourcing initiative vehicle that all agencies could use to get this, you know, commodity good. They had 15 winners on the contract, 13 of whom were small businesses. And I remember when it happened, I said, that's great. I mean, they showed real effort in getting the small getting to small businesses, getting small businesses onto this, 13 of 15. But I still said, let me see how the dollars flow. Let me check back in. Well, I did check back in, and I check back in just about every week. And as of now, about 75% of the dollars through that vehicle are going to small businesses. So you can accomplish all of these various goals. And that vehicle is going to save probably somewhere over $200 million by the end of 2013. So these are the types of things that we need to do. Now, one thing is, we don't just need to sprint all at once. We need to be thoughtful. We need to engage in some cases in the crawl, walk, run type model. So not every agency or every commodity area is going to be ready for a government-wide strategic sourcing solution tomorrow. You can also do, though, agency-wide solutions. Great example there, Department of Commerce. They said, you know what, we've got a lot of component parts, a lot of bureaus, you know, all making certain buying decisions on their own, not in a strategic, collaborative way. And one of the areas they looked at was desktops and laptops, you know, IT commodity purchasing. By bringing all of that together, and this is not a simple overnight process because you got to do it right, you got to do it thoughtfully, you got to do it in collaboration with all the stakeholders, but in bringing those things together and sourcing them strategically, they were able to utilize a small business and save $25 million. These are the types of things that we can do to deliver value to the taxpayer and still achieve all the other goals that the president has told me are very important.
I want to ask you about small businesses. You've mentioned them a number of times during our conversation. We have your June 6th memo on small businesses posted at federalnewsradio.com. And that lists three immediate steps. You're expecting deliverables from agencies. What's the timeline on those deliverables, Joe?
Sure. So 1 month after the memo was issued approximately, so you know, the first week of July or so will be the first follow-up on each item. Now, to be clear, a couple of things about this memo. This is not a fire-and-forget memo. This is a we gave agencies, and for listeners that haven't had a chance to read this, we gave agencies three specific objectives to follow up on. One, making sure that they're using the tool that the Small Business Jobs Act gave them in terms of setting aside task orders under those multiple award contracts for small businesses. There had been some confusion, could I do that? And especially as the government's moving towards greater utilization of these multiple award vehicles for their efficiency and for other reasons, that became very important. Congress acted and gave agencies the ability to set these aside or clarify that they certainly had the ability to set these aside for small businesses, and they need to do that. Secondly, we ran some analysis on how small businesses were doing below the simplified acquisition threshold. This is the sweet spot between $3,000 and $150,000 per contract, where there's really a presumption that small businesses should be getting that work. And they were not getting it, or are not getting it, in the amount that I would like and that we would all think is best. So this memo says they need plans to improve there and they need to let us know what they're doing and what tactical actions they're taking. Third, over the last 3 years, as the White House and the President have really stepped up the focus on small business contracting, called all the agencies to task saying this is critically important, we've seen the positive effect that high-level agency accountability can have, the improvements that this can drive. And so we wanted to make clear that each agency had that high-level accountability built in for meeting their small business goals. I was incredibly blessed to get the job at SBA and to work with small businesses day in and day out, watching them grow their businesses and create jobs over the last 3 years. And as I transitioned to this role, where I have many additional responsibilities on my plate, I wanted to make sure that everyone knew that I'm still completely bought in on the value of small business contracting. I know that this is a win-win. It's a win for the agencies that get to work with some of the most innovative, nimble, high-quality contractors, and it's a win for the taxpayer to be able to have the agencies buying from these great small businesses. And so as my first act after getting sworn in, I was really excited to get to sign this memo with my old boss, Karen Mills, and I'm being very excited to see the agency's response to these actions.
Last question, Joe. You talked about pacing and how this is not a sprint, but the political reality of your situation is you may have as short as 7 months or as long as 4 years and 7 months to institute some of these initiatives and to continue some of the initiatives of your predecessors. How does that affect the way that you're going to look at trying to accomplish some of the things that we've talked about today?
Well, the good news is that at OMB, we work so hard that I'll pack a solid 15 or 16 months of work time into those 7 months of calendar time. But I'm also supremely confident that I'll have a five-year job here. Either way, all the things that we're doing in procurement are smart, good business practices, driven by things that I saw in the private sector that worked, driven by things that agencies have been calling for. And in everything we do, I want to build the framework for a sustainable set of improvements, not things that go guardrail to guardrail, things that everyone agrees are smart improvements in the way that we buy the goods and services that we need. You know, with $500 billion going out every year, like I said, if we can make just a little bit of an improvement percentage-wise, that's huge dollars. And I'm very excited to see what the next 6 months brings, and I'm hopeful that I will be equally as excited to see what the 4 years after that brings.